McGinn. Options inside the box. Hayes, what a ball for Aberdeen! Johnny Hayes! The breakthrough! Aberdeen have been in control of, and now they hit the front.
Good evening and welcome to the latest By the Minute Aberdeen podcast. This week's show is brought to you by the numbers 9 and 23, as we'll look back to the win against Ross County that saw us stretch the gap to third place. We'll hope that we can grow it further with a win at Hamilton on Tuesday, and then we'll discuss the upcoming Scottish Cup quarter-final versus Partick Thistle. Joining us to do just that is a man who we'd have on the show much more, but he'd show us up far too much. It's Tom Watt. Hi Tom, how are you doing?
Hello. Good to be here. Thanks very much.
Great to have you. And a man with absolutely no shame at being stood up, or shown up rather, Martin Clunas. How are you, Martin?
I'm doing great, Richard. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So, to Saturday's hard-fought 0 points for style win over Ross County. We've praised the manager in recent weeks for his tactical flexibility, and it was to the fore again on Saturday. Starting off, obviously, with a very familiar 4-2-3-1 formation. Changed to 3-4-3, 5-4-1 at the start of the second half. Then with the introduction of Miles Storey for Mark Reynolds, meant to switch to a 3-5-2. Miles certainly brought a bit of a zip and a bit of a dash to the front line, which had been a little bit static in the first part of the match. What do you think of his introduction, Martin?
Hugely impressed. I mean, we've not seen anything really, have we, so far this season from him. So I think that's the sort of his first real impression in the team. We were obviously a little bit bemused in the first part of the season when, you know, it became a bit of a running joke that he maybe got 30 seconds at the end of a game as a time wasting sub here and there, but you know, he came on, he looked just really busy. He's undoubtedly a skillful footballer. He certainly contributed in many ways. You know, I mean, I think that Rooney really benefited from having him coming on as well. I mean, we really did. I think the second half, I thought we looked really excellent, and though that in part is due to the introduction of Storey.
Tom, the change the other week against Partick to a three at the back was, according to Derek McInnes, to try and get the Niall McGinn and Johnny Hayes on the ball more. It was a different outlook on Saturday. His chat after the match was about having two focal points up front to give them more problems. He's shown a lot of tactical flexibility in the last few weeks, which belies his reputation as a pragmatist, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think largely that has been down to the fact he's got a squad to play with now, and it's not just previously we would look at the bench and it was either, do we throw Barry Robson on to see out the last 10 minutes, or do we throw someone else on in the hope of, you know, hope of getting something. But we've actually got a depth of squad there, so we can be tactically quite flexible. The options on the bench mean we can quite rapidly alter the entire way we play. Yeah, you know, rather than putting players on to see out games defensively, we can bring on like a Paulett, less Storey for that game, but players like Paulett and Storey are great counter-attacking players. I mean, just touching on Storey again briefly, I think it's perhaps a little unfair to say this given how few games we've seen him in, but it was the first time we've seen him at all looking like the player that I think Derek McInnes thought he was getting. This player that stretches play, that can play either side up front. You know, one of those players managers always talk about playing right across the line and getting in behind players. Whereas previously he looked very much kind of off the shoulder player that was perhaps going to be limited for a team like Aberdeen that has more of the possession. But you know, he's another example of how we can be a little bit more tactically flexible because we have the bodies, because we don't just have 11 players that are all would get into most starting 11s elsewhere in the league. We've probably got 16 or 17 players that would get a game for, you know, anyone bar Celtic. So it lets you have a bit more flexibility, lets you change quite quickly and cause some problems, ask some questions of teams when they're being obstinate, like Ross County were, certainly for the first 45 minutes.
Let's talk a little bit more, Tom, if we can, about Story. I saw his performance described as performing the McGuinness role, which I think kind of ties in with what you were saying. Just he was much more about harrying the defender with the ball, about closing down that space, than we'd perhaps expected to see of him early in the season. I recall actually having you on the show early in the season, and we spoke about that, you know, he would have been a good option away from home in European games, perhaps, or if he was a bit more on form, maybe even a bit better, away from home at Parkhead, that kind of idea. But it showed, as you said, a different aspect to his game that we just hadn't seen that often before.
Yeah, and, you know, as good a squad as we've got, we don't have a huge amount of those players. You know, the Ranjak, Graham Shinney are closing down players. You know, they suffocate teams as best we can, but we don't really have anyone like that up front. You know, Adam Rooney's good with his back to goal. Niall McGinn and Johnny Hayes create things, but, you know, there's not really that same option of someone that's going to close down space, not give a defence too much time to play the ball around. And especially when you're playing against what was, you know, they can dress out how they want, but it was a five-man defence. If you've got someone that can force them to play long, force them to try and be a bit more direct and not just pass the ball between their own defence all day, then that really, really does, you know, does set you up quite nicely. And the way he played, there was a lot of energy to it. It wasn't something we've seen from him before, and it is something we don't particularly have anywhere else. You know, I know exactly what they mean with the McGuinness role, or the rich man's Darren Mackey, perhaps. Just getting in the faces of players, closing down, making sure no one can dwell too much on the ball, and just giving them a bit of a headache. And, you know, it wasn't just that. He had some nice touches. He got out wide. He created some things as well. But, you know, if that's the role he's going to play, then you can see there's a position for him in the squad in the medium to long term.
Martin, in terms of the trust of the players, obviously Derek McInnes now feels he has more options on the bench that he can trust. Don't you also think that it's he now has more trust in the 11 starting players to actually adapt to a completely different tactical formation, which for some lesser players isn't all that straightforward?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think that there was, you know, in the last couple of seasons, we've seen players at the club. I mean, particularly you say about the bench there. I mean, you look at the guys that were started on the bench on Saturday. You've got Christie, you've got Paulett, you've got Wright, you've got Miles Story. Those are guys that can win you the game. Whereas you look at last season or the season before, we were looking at guys that had been brought in like Josh Parker or Monacana, you know, who are nowhere near the quality of those four that I just named. So I think that with the bench getting stronger, it seems very obvious to say it, but the starting 11 up their game. And I think we're getting better as a team as well. And McInnes, as a manager, is reaping the rewards of that he's able to put the trust in the players. He clearly believes in, you know, even the defence. I mean, we've been a bit critical of, say, Ash Taylor, but he's obviously got belief in him that he can do the job for him. Otherwise, you wouldn't be playing. No, O'Connor sitting on the bench only came on for the last 10 minutes. So McInnes has got trust in his players, and that's the thing. I mean, you look at the starting 11, and we've got players there who are, you know, some of the best players in the league. I mean, you look at someone like Shea Logan, who is, I still think, is the best right back in the league. You know, Ryan Jack's an excellent midfielder. Graham Shinney, I'm not going to get into the whole thing about the Scotland caps again, but Graham Shinney is a phenomenal footballer. And hopefully he will be with Aberdeen for years to come, because it's that sort of thing that, you know, will continue. We can build and the club will only get bigger and better.
I think that's actually a really interesting point. If you've ever read the book The Numbers Game, it says that basically in basketball, a squad or a team is as good as their best player, because there's so few players on the court at once. But football is all about how your weakest player, that's what defines a successful team or not, like where the weak link is. And we've probably got a depth of 16, 17 players that are now very, very good. And there aren't really any significant weak links in that. And you can't say that from any other teams in the league.
And it really has grown year on year, hasn't it, Tom? I think maybe first year under McInnes, you're maybe looking at 8 or 9 players of that standard, and then it's maybe grown to 11 the following season, 13, and now, yeah, you're looking at 15 or 16 who can make a real positive contribution.
Yeah, like you say, it's, you know, there were weak links, even a couple of injuries last season, and there were still weak links in the squad. But there aren't that many. It's a reasonably balanced squad with a fair amount of depth. And, you know, at the start of the season, Derek McInnes said that was what he wanted. He wanted to build a squad that could play for the entire season. Obviously, we started very, very early. We're hoping to progress in both cup competitions, got to a final one. You know, we're going to have a very long season. So having a bit of depth to the squad was important. And now it looks like some of the players who maybe 2 or 3 months ago we knew could do it, but perhaps weren't turning on, like your Stories, like your Paulets, are now able to turn games from the bench. And that's, you know, that's hugely important, and just gives you, you know, gives teams a little bit more to think about. It means that we're not just hoping for mistakes. We can actually force the issue a little bit more.
To the neutral observer, Martin, on Saturday, the tactical battle would have been fairly interesting. And I think, yes, as Tom's already pointed out, the early mark went to Jim McIntyre for starting with a back three and probably upsetting our plans with that to start with. But the other thing which would have caught the eye was it was probably the state of the pitch. Now, clearly it does have an impact on our preferred style of play. Derek McInnes spoke in the aftermath of his players deserving a better surface to play on. He's right not to be happy about it, isn't he? But ultimately, how much can you really do in a Northern European winter?
Well, that's the problem. You know, we have the winter break where the pitch gets a month off, but that month is no use because it's usually freezing. So there's nothing you can really do. I mean, it happens all across the country, or for the clubs that have got a grass pitch anyway. You see some of the pitches in the league. I mean, we saw on the Scottish Cup game the other Sunday, the Hearts pitch is absolutely appalling. They've relayed it. Doesn't look like there's a big enough space in our schedule for us to do that with Pittodrie. I don't think they would do that anyway. It's just something that, unfortunately, that we're going to have to try and work around. I mean, it's our style of football, so we just have to. It's unfortunate, but it's perhaps something that, you know, needs to be maybe looked at in the summer, about, you know, during perhaps the winter break, to get the pitch relayed or something, because this is the type of football McInnes wants to play. There's no, you know, if we're going to be playing on a potato field, then, you know, McInnes is sort of hamstrung already, and he's quite right to be unhappy. Yeah,
and this is something, Tom, which I think the club's overarching ambition to move out to the outskirts of the city is probably going to come into conflict with Derek McInnes's short and medium term needs, because there's no way we're going to spend significant amounts on a hybrid pitch, for example, whilst we're looking to move in 5 years' time.
Yeah, it is a difficult one. And I mean, as much as we'd all kind of immediately side with the manager, if we've got ambitions to up sticks, then, and you know, personally speaking, I really want that to happen, then we can't really go spending six figures on relaying the pitch or going down some sort of artificial pitch route for what might only be 2 or 3 seasons. So I guess we've just got to work with what we've got. The ground staff are going to have to up their game and do whatever they can. When there's a gap of 10 days or so, perhaps over the international break, which is what, two or three weeks away, we can do something just to kind of patch it up to get through the final 8 to 10 games or so. But yeah, it's a significant concern. But, you know, one thing I guess we can look at is whether, you know, what we can do if and when we do move to this new stadium, get it right from the off, and make sure that we've got a plan for whether it's, you know, whether it is a grass pitch, whether we have some hybrid pitch, whether we, you know, go with something else, whether they're in 3 or 4 years, there's something even better that we can look at. Whatever route we choose to go down, there's some sort of system in place so that we don't have this conversation as regularly as we do. You know, as you say, we are hamstrung from where we are in Europe. Everyone north of, in the north part of Europe is going to have this sort of issue at some point, because it's just wet and cold and attritional and turns into a potato field. But there has to be some sort of middle ground where we can do a little bit more and just be a little bit kinder to the pitch. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we were, in the summer, we were still having concerts and stuff on it. So we've come on a little bit further from that. But yeah, there's got to be some sort of middle ground there.
The other interesting comment I thought in Dermot McInnes' post-match comments, Martin, was the phrase, "We don't always enjoy playing, but we do enjoy winning." Yeah, we enjoyed winning as well. It was quite an attritional 90 minutes on Saturday. But yeah, I think the supporters that were there, they would have been happy with the 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, I took the comment that obviously they don't always enjoy playing but enjoy winning. I took that to mean it was one of those games where there's games throughout the season where, fine, we've just got to get through them. Hopefully come out of the 90 minutes unscathed, no injuries and with the 3 points. Ross County is, every time we've played them this season, it's one of those types of games where, it's probably not going to be an instant classic. And it is just a case about getting these fixtures out of the way. We're at the business end of the season now as well, and we're closing in on, the split, where we're obviously we've qualified for the top six. So this is the time of the season now where it is just about getting the results, getting the points on the board, and ensuring that you're going to finish in a good position.
Well, you know what? You can't actually say the phrase top six to an Aberdeen fan without thinking of Jimmy Calderwood. And Jimmy Calderwood's reputation and Dermot McInnes' reputation is something I want to talk about, Tom. Dermot McInnes has still, I think, got a reputation amongst a lot of Aberdeen fans as being quite a negative manager, but the stats really don't back that up at all, do they?
No, and I mean, particularly not this season. And I mean, I think there's an awful lot in it for the fact that he's built year on year. It's hard, it's harder to quantify it this season, maybe in terms of the points and the fact we didn't have the best of starts, and the fact that Celtic are so much better than they were last year. But, we've scored 50 goals so far this season. I think under McInnes, the most we've ever scored in a league season is 62. So the chances are we're going to score more goals than we usually do. I mean, one of the kind of arguments that was always levelled at him was he was very controlling of games. I mean, early on, the phrase he used to use an awful lot was game management. And we were good at that, getting in front, controlling a game, maybe we'd nick another goal and win 2-1, but 2-0, sorry. But it was generally very, very measured, very controlled, not quite strangling games, but it was about game management. It was managing the game right the way through. This season, we've been much better at killing teams off. We've been much better at getting all our attacking talent on the pitch at once. And there's been a few games when we've absolutely annihilated teams. As you say, the Ross County games aren't necessarily a classic, and we have had to have a bit of luck here or there. But having said that, we've absolutely peppered their goals in every single game we've played. So, you get these breaks when you keep you keep taking shots. Every 10 minutes you've got something firing in. It's a slightly unfair reputation, especially seeing where we were when he took over. And I think just gradually he's built on the squad every season. And it's harder to make a team defensively solid than it is to just add attacking talent. And he's made us very good defensively, albeit with a couple of hiccups here and there. And then gradually year on year, and as the season's progressed, our attacking prowess has clicked as well. And you can't really dispute the record at the moment over the last 11, 12 games. It's not a record of a conservative manager.
Well, his key goal scorer during his time here, a man he brought to the club, Adam Rooney, who we devoted quite a bit of recent podcast talking about. Martin, Saturday was a mixed afternoon for Adam. You had the bad, that was the fresh air swipe to Johnny Hayes' crossball right in half-time. If that had been a Darren Mackey, I think the howls of protest in the stands would have been audible in Dundee. You have the good, that was the overhead kicks, which is something he's seemingly obsessed with trying to score one from before the end of the season. And then you have the rather ugly winning goal, but obviously, they all count.
They do, yeah. I mean, the overhead kicks were just were outrageous, really. It shows that Rooney is clearly playing with like quite a lot of confidence right now as well, because I don't think he'd be trying stuff like that if, you know, he hadn't just, you know, banged in a hat trick the other week and then, you know, knocked in a few other goals in previous weeks. So he's clearly playing with a lot of confidence and is willing to try things like the overhead kicks. Obviously the fresher, sorry, the sitter was just that was a little bit disappointing. And you look at that winning goal. I mean, he doesn't know anything about it, and you know, I mean, I've not heard the interview with him or what he said after it, but there's no way he knew anything about it. It just hit off him, but it went in. And again, what we spoke about last week is, you know, he's a poacher. He's there in the 6-yard box. He gets goals, and there's really, you know, you can't really sort of ask for much more if, you know, he's getting these winning goals in important times.
Tom, again, that was something that the manager was keen to stress post-match on Saturday. It may have been a fairly fortuitous goal, but it was all about Adam Rooney being in the right area. We've had our say in the past couple of weeks on Rooney, but he's still the number one option, presumably, for you if we're going to go with a lone striker.
Yeah, I mean, I think... I know he had that awful miss, and he had he's had a couple of those... where he perhaps should have scored in recent weeks, even though he's been relatively prolific. But I actually thought he had a very good game all round. And there were, especially when he had a strike partner, he was dropping deeper, he was setting things up. And there was just it was a very decent all round attacking performance from him. He wasn't, you know, we've seen him with a couple of different partners playing up front, and it doesn't always click, but it seemed to click with Story. And He was setting things up, and it was more of an all-round attacking threat than just being the focal point for the attack. I mean, for me, he's the best striker we have. He has probably got more goals this season than his form might have suggested, because there's been he has had a couple of patchy periods of form here and there. But you know what he. As you say, what he's very, very good at is being there at the right, you know, right time, right place, and getting on the end of things. And when you've got people like that, and especially in a game when it's scrappy, and you know you're liable to get a little ricochet, you're liable to get something that comes off the goalkeeper, then you know those are absolutely vital. We obviously get more and more obsessed with your strikers doing more than just scoring goals. But, you know, if the only thing they do in the game is tap one in from 2 yards out when the defender's had a swing at it and that wins you the game, then, you know, we'll take that.
Now, something else we spoke about last week, in fact, about Adam Rooney was the penalty kick and how that is often dismissed as a goal, which is unfair in a lot of regards, because it's a skill to put them away. And Adam Rooney is definitely one of the most skilled in doing that in this division. Now, if you picked up a copy of Nutmeg, the Scottish Football Quarterly, you would have seen Tom's article, in fact, about penalty kicks in the SPFL era. Now, Tom, Rooney's record, obviously, just the one miss in the league, one in the Europa League as well. Does he have any other contenders for the role of the best in the league?
The only other one that's really close, though, is Kenny McLean, who's got 8 from 8. Chris Commons, I think, has 10 from 11 off the top of my head, but I don't think he's liable to have any very soon. I mean, Adam Rooney has 16 goals from 17 penalties, and I mean, there's a fairly reasonable argument to say that even the one he missed, he was in on, and we scored from anyway. As you say, it's almost like penalties have moved on from it being a gimme, you know, it's ridiculous that people miss, to people understanding that sometimes they're difficult. But it's worth so much. I mean, we've scored, I think, something like 15% of the goals we've scored in the Scottish Premiership era have come from penalties. And it's in a game of such fine margins. If you're not scoring your penalties, like Hearts at the moment, for example, it costs you massive amounts of points over the course of a season. Like, if you miss, I mean, the difference between, say, scoring three or four penalties that you miss and your keeper saving one is probably, you know, potentially be the difference between 8, 10, 12 points in a season. So having someone, it sounds so simple, having someone who can vary where they put the ball, who's confident when they've got these opportunities and you can rely on to score these, is worth so many points over the course of the season, so many wins. And it does look actually like, if you look at the stats over the last few years, like most teams kind of get that. One of the things you would maybe think that with more post-match analysis or more goalkeeper training, more video reviews and things after games, it would be easier to understand where players are putting the penalties, if there are sort of traits or habits that penalty takers get into where they put the ball in certain directions. You know, there certainly are, but actually 84% of penalties are scored. It's getting better season on season. I think there were, until maybe January, the end of January, there were 37 penalties scored in a row in the Premiership, which is the most we've had at any point. But flip side, if you're like Hearts and you can't score them at the moment, or you know, like Celtic were a couple of years back, it severely, severely damages what you can do in a season. Your teammates shouldn't be clapping hands and commiserating them if they miss, because it costs them leagues.
Off the top of my head, I can remember two that we've missed. I think Barry Robson missed one at Partick. This is in the SPFL era. And obviously Rooney's missed back in December. You'll correct me, I'm sure, Tom, but how does our record compare to other sides within the league?
I think only Celtic have had more than us, and I think we've maybe... I think Niall McGinn certainly missed one against Hearts a couple of years back when we lost 2-1 and we were 1-0 up, and then Barry Robson got sent off and we lost 2-1. I have a feeling there's another one. I think we've missed four, but I think we've had something like, I'm sure it's like 29 penalties and we've missed four of them, which is, you know, pretty good going. And especially when you look at, you know, teams like Partick Thistle, I think they've had the low single figures in penalties.
And the key to Rooney's success, obviously he has to vary where he puts it, but it's presumably about hitting the corners with a bit of pace. Because I know you did some analysis about where these penalty kicks were struck as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously if you put them in the top corners, it's much harder to save. I think from memory, if it was the... it was the goalkeeper's top left was the best place to put it. I don't think anyone has saved anything if the ball was put into the top left. But generally speaking, if you find the corners, it's very, very difficult for a goalkeeper to save it. And if you're confident and you can vary where you're putting it and you're showing a bit of variation in how you take it and your body language running up, it's very difficult to pick. Other than just to guess which way to go. But, you know, if you can put a bit of pace on it and find the bottom corner, even if a goalie knows exactly where it's going, it's very, very difficult for them to save it. And, you know, that's one of the things that Adam Rooney is very, very good at.
So just a few minutes just to reinforce the importance of penalty, because we have been guilty on this podcast of dismissing it sometimes when we bring up the non-penalty goal 90 stats and so on. But, yeah, they're absolutely key. And as Tom points out, a good proportion of our goals in the SPFL era have been scored from the spot. So Tuesday night, we've got Hamilton away, a fixture which gives us more worries than it probably should do, Martin. They're bottom, but I wouldn't say there's any real difference between them and any of the other sides between 6th and 12th. And our record there is decidedly not great. In total, at New Douglas Park, only 4 wins from 9, and only 1-4 under Derek McInnes. Do you anticipate there being any changes to the side, obviously with the game on Sunday looming?
I don't think so. If there is a change, I think it might be that we maybe see Ryan Christie. Other than that, you know, I don't think there's no such chance of it being wholesale changes, because like, even though we spoke earlier on about Derek being, you know, kind of cautious and things like that. He's not going to be making four or five changes. I think he's one of the, he wants to get the points on board and get the lead in the league as big as we possibly can first. I mean, you look at Hamilton, I think they've got quite a few injuries at the moment as well. So they are struggling. I mean, they're now bottom. It's a real struggle for them. So they're going to make it difficult for us. It's going to be scrappy. It's going to be a battling game. Their pitch is obviously flat, which is maybe something that'll help us, but it hasn't in the past. But we're obviously going to be missing Stockley. So there's going to be, you know, there's no, that physicality that possibly you might want to have against them isn't going to be there. Maybe we'll see a little bit more of Story as the game goes on, but I think that we should probably start with the same 11 and then see where we are and make a change. I think that, you know, we've got a very good first starting 11, and I'd like to see us try and maintain that.
Tom, am I right to be worried about this? I think I'm basing it on the fact that obviously previous visits there have shown that Hamilton employ the high press very well. It's a very fast pitch, which is kind of the same conditions where we really, really struggled at Kilmarnock the other week.
In theory, this should be nothing to worry about because, I mean, Hamilton at the moment are worse than Motherwell, and that's saying something. But, you know, we don't have a great record there. Hamilton seem to be able to frustrate us. They tend to be either very, very up for it, get in our faces, solid defensively and take their chances, or, you know, the other couple of the wins that we have had, they've been pretty hopeless there. I'm going to make the conscious decision not to go tomorrow because I've been to New Douglas Park 3 times and I've yet to see us win there. Thank me in advance. You know, we should go there more confident than we perhaps will. If we look back to the first time we were there the season and maybe get angry about that result and look at it as an opportunity to put right that result because, you know, we didn't really turn up that day, but it was an absolute travesty that we lost that game. I think if we play anything like we have in the last couple of games, I mean, even the Kilmarnock game when we weren't really at the races, we should have enough to see them off because, you know, they've had a pretty wretched run of it. But, you know, they held their own for a wee while against Celtic. They've had a couple of encouraging spells in recent games, even though they've not necessarily been good. I mean, they haven't capitulated the way that Motherwell seem to have in recent weeks. They don't have a huge amount of quality in that squad at the moment. So it shouldn't hold any fear, but, you know, there's always just this slight, there's a couple of slight variables in going to New Douglas Park, the pitch, who's going to turn up. Ali Crawford, I still think, is a massively talented player. And they've got a decent record against us, so we just need to be professional about it, I think.
Well, I think Crawford is actually struggling with injury at the moment. Also, Greg Doherty is available for Hamilton on Tuesday. I think the difference between them and Motherwell at the moment, Tom, is that, as you perhaps alluded to, Motherwell are getting spanked on occasion, whereas Hamilton have been competitive in almost every game this season, actually. Competitive on the scoreline, at least, anyway. Not quite sure how they managed to come away from Pittodrie back in December, just having lost by a single goal. But there you are. Martin, again, the record's not great. Do you believe in bogey grounds? Do you believe in that?
Not at all, no. We used to always talk about, you know, Morton being Aberdeen's bogey team back in the day, and I don't think that was anything to do with, you know, the grounds or anything like that. I just think that there's just, it's just, I don't believe that. I'm not a fan of fate or all these kind of things. It's just, things happen, and that's what it is. I don't want to say this, but no, is Ibrox a bogey ground then? It's just that we haven't won there, you know? In the same way as, no, Hamilton, I wouldn't say, are a bogey team at all. It's just that they've managed to get some decent results. No, and the results have really been greater than the sum of their parts because, you know, in every aspect of, you know, the pitch and the management, we are superior to them. But on any given day, you know, they've been able to get decent results from us. And like you say, how it was only 2-1 back in December, you know, I'll never know. But they've been on a pretty, you know, they've had a couple of wins since then, but they've been on a pretty awful run of form. You know, they beat Inverness, who were bottom at the time, you know. But that's their last league win. You know, they were taken to a replay and then penalties by Dunfermline, who are, you know, really poor. Maybe it's something that, you know, Martin Canning recently has, you know, got some sort of some tactical edge over McInnes, but, you know, we've still managed to beat them once. Well, we beat them back in December, so I don't think they should pose us any huge problems, because, as I say, I mean, we keep saying in this podcast, and I don't want to be critical of other teams, because we're not good enough just to say, let's turn up and up and we'll beat them no bother, because that's not going to happen. But we have enough quality, and if the quality isn't there, we have enough battling winners in the team with ability that we should be able to do enough to get past teams like Hamilton.
Well, that's understood and accepted. And however good that, you know, we can be mentally to put our record down out of our heads, Tom, it's still going to be a positive boost, surely, to the Hamilton players to know that they've got a past record against Aberdeen which is better than it perhaps ought to be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily believe in bogey grounds as well, but either. But I think what you do have is players that, you know, maybe they win, they get a lucky win, maybe they get two lucky wins, and then, you know, once you've beaten a team a couple of times, you know that they're vulnerable. You know that you can beat them. You all of the players that have, and pretty much everyone that starts tomorrow will have been in a Hamilton side that's already beaten Aberdeen. And it's not like, you know, if you're playing Celtic, there's a bit of fear about it. If you're Kilmarnock and you're playing Aberdeen, you know, there are probably players on the Kilmarnock books that weren't born the last time they beat us. So it kind of becomes this, I can see how it would become a sort of psychological boost or a psychological barrier to it. It's nothing about the grounds themselves, it's just there's a bit of a, everyone in Scotland plays each other so often that you're bound to have teams you enjoy playing a little bit more often than others. You know, their players have spoken this week about how they're going to need to pick up some wins or some points against ourselves, against the, you know, the likes of Hearts, St Johnstone, Celtic, against the better teams in the league, because they need to pull away from the bottom of the table, and they're not gonna, you know, they're not gonna go in tomorrow, you know, full of fear about it. They're gonna feel that they don't have to go too far back to look at some very good results they've had against us. So I think their players will be up for it. They, you know, as you said, they've got a couple of injuries. They've got a lot of young players in the squad at the moment as a result of that. But they've not been they've not been a terrible unit in the last couple of weeks. They have got a bit of recent history to suggest they know what they're doing with us. And if we don't turn up and if they get a bit of luck, they'll cause us problems.
Well, when we had Gavin Mayer on the show a few weeks ago, we spoke with him about how many points it would take to guarantee second. I think the consensus ended up about 71, 72 points. But, Martin, in recent weeks, we've seen, obviously, implosions at Ibrox, and one which has probably been overshadowed, but I'll let you cast your eye on it, because, you know, we never want to miss an opportunity to take some amusement in their plight, at Hearts as well. The gap is growing week on week, isn't it?
Anyone with eyes can see that, and it's great to see. There was a wee moment where we thought Hearts had maybe sorted things out. Obviously, Cathro started off a little bit dodgy. The city seemed to have found his feet, and then it's fallen apart again. Brilliant. I do enjoy laughing at Hearts. It's one of my favourite things in Scottish football. I can't deny that, and I've done it many times on this podcast. If we can, you know, again get the 3 points again tomorrow, that would be up to 12. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure when the Rangers next play, but, you know, we can only do what we can do now, and we are, you know, in the box seat, and I can't see, you know, looking at the team we have and the way we've been able to play. The Kilmarnock game last weekend was pretty awful, but we ground through it. The Ross County game wasn't great, but we ground through it and got the win. You know, you blew away Motherwell the last round of the cup. We managed to get past Ross County with a late goal. It's that battling quality that this team has. They know that if things aren't going the right way, that they can still get the results. And, you know, while other teams are struggling and know things aren't going well for them on the pitch, they're losing games and they're throwing points away like it's going out of fashion. And I think that's the difference between us, that we are clearly by far the second best team in this country. And I think that, you know, the league table shows that, and the league table will show that at the end of the season as well.
I think it's also worthwhile. I mean, it was something that, some of the pundits picked up a couple of weeks ago. Both Rangers and Hearts have to play Celtic again, you know, twice. So although we could potentially have a 12-point lead plus a vastly superior goal difference over Rangers. So that's effectively, that's a cliche, but 13 points plus you can't see, Graham Murty is shrinking by the second at the prospect of having to play Celtic again. So at the moment, you can't really see where we're going to drop enough points. And it's a huge credit to the players from the November time, where it must be something like 18, 19 points turnaround on Rangers from in that time. And, it's obviously, we're all delighted by it. I mean, one thing that's quite interesting with Hearts is as much has been made of the signing policy and Cathro, I think their season finished when Callum Patterson got injured, because they lost a great fullback, they lost their top scorer, they lost Callum Patterson at the time he got injured had taken more shots than any other player in the league, and a fairly creative fullback. So and the fact that he was injured also meant they didn't get any transfer fee for him. So they've kind of capitulated as well, they were all over the place playing square pegs and round holes at the weekend. So, it's definitely ours to throw away. We've got a reasonable run of fixtures before the split comes up. And you would have thought, the way things are going, don't get too ahead of ourselves at the moment, but you'd have thought that we should build up enough of a head of steam that by the time the split comes, we're fairly comfortable.
Well, Derek McInnes, obviously, after the game on Saturday, was at pains to point out that gap has appeared and grown quite large in a very short space of time, and it could easily go the other way. But we wouldn't be a fan podcast if we didn't take a minute just to laugh at the plight of others. So plenty of people are doing it about the situation at Ibrox. As we're equal opportunities here, we wanted to make sure that Hearts got their time in the spotlight as well. That is obviously leading up to Hearts winning at Pittodrie in a few weeks time, no question. But the big game of the week, Hamilton's important, clearly it's important, but really the big game of the week, in which we hope people are up for and up for turning up for, is the game against Partick Thistle in the Scottish Cup quarter-final on Sunday afternoon. Now, we don't have to look too far back to know that this will be a proper battle. Good win for them at the weekend against, as Tom said, a pretty disjointed Hearts team. My question, Tom, would be, that game, that league game a few weeks ago, turned on the change in formation to switch to a three at the back, having McGinn and Hayes as wing-backs. And McInnes, after the game, spoke about that change was to get those two on the ball more, even if it meant them picking the ball up deeper. Is there a theory that says, why not just start like that? We know how Partick Thistle are going to line up. Why not just go like that to start?
I think there's certainly a pretty solid argument for doing that. Obviously you want to be proactive. You don't want to be reactive to what your opponents are doing, especially in a cup game at home. But we know exactly how Partick Thistle will line up. They were very effective with their their three man defence. They were very good again against Hearts. As good as they needed to be. They're good from set pieces. They're solid enough defensively. They close things down well in midfield, and they've got in Chris Doolan a reasonable finisher that will get them goals. I think there is certainly an argument that if it was as effective as it was for 20-25 minutes a couple of weeks ago, then it's worth starting like that and take the game to them and get these guys on the ball early on and pose some questions rather than trying it as a plan B, because like you say, we know exactly how they're going to play. We know who's going to play. How they're going to line up. They're not, Alan Archibald's not a manager that's going to suddenly make any grand tactical switches. Not least because Partick Thistle have actually had a very decent run recently off the back of of the way they've been playing. So, you know, personally speaking, I would absolutely start with wing-backs and, you know, try and get at them early on.
The other side to that, obviously, Martin, was that Jaden Stockley made a big impression in that game. Ryan Christie came on and did well as well. And Stockley, of course, scored that tremendous goal at Fir Hill back in November. Again, would you consider introducing them from the start? Obviously, you were reluctant to change your winning side when we spoke about the Hamilton game, but is there cause for doing that, do you think, on Sunday? Or do you trust the starting 11? I think the other aspect is that, obviously, that pitch comes into play again. Is the patient possession football that we normally play the right approach?
There's 50-50 ways of looking at it, and I know while I do advocate, you know, keeping a side as settled as possible. You know, I mean, Stockley's meant to be, you know, a doubt for tomorrow or the Hamilton game, whereas Derek seems to think he'll be back and he'll be fit or ready for the Cup quarterfinal on Sunday. And it is a one-off game, so it's not a game you can afford to take too many chances in. Not that I think that Partick are strong enough to have us dead and buried within 40 minutes or 45 minutes, but, you know, you're quite right to say Stockley has done well for them against them this season, and if he's fit, certainly wouldn't have any problems with going for three at the back and having him up there alongside, obviously alongside Adam Rooney, because Adam Rooney has to play all the time, as far as I've said before. It is tricky because we have obviously someone would then have to drop out, even if it is three at the back. You know, I don't really want to see McGinn and Hayes playing at wing backs, like we have seen before, but it proved successful before. So if it gets us over the line, I'd be absolutely delighted to see it. The change that will be made would be if Stockley is fit, then I think he would come in. I think that would be the only change that you will see, though.
Okay, I warn you in advance, we're now going to talk about crowds. So if you want to switch off for 5 minutes, you can do that. But I fully understand that on a February afternoon against Ross County, there's going to be a limit. There's going to be a ceiling to the crowd you can get, even if you have won 9 out of the last 10 games, which was the case before Saturday. That's £15 for the game on Sunday. Obviously, it's not on the season ticket. It is live on the BBC, but it's at a semi-decent time. Now, Tom, I don't know about you, but I'd pay to watch this side at the moment. I think we're good value.
Yeah, I'd hope so. I mean, I think their fans like winning as much as Derek McInnes said. It was about enjoying the win rather than enjoying the football. I think the fans are largely the same, especially in a cup game. A good chance of getting to a semi-final and a reasonable set of sides left in it. You know, a very good chance of getting to at least another final again. You'd hope that the way we're playing, the fact we're not conceding an awful lot of goals, the fact that we've got a lot of options up front and we're kind of asking questions of teams, we'd maybe get a little bit more than you might otherwise for a Sunday game that's also on TV. You know, we'd hope that it'll be five figures at least. Maybe I'm being rather optimistic, but I would hope it wouldn't be significantly lower than we would get on an average league game.
Martin, why isn't there more enthusiasm about this side locally? Is it just because we're so distant in second place?
I think that does become part of it. Celtic are so far ahead in the league, they're not going to be caught. And there's a little bit of apathy there that if we come up against them, we'll probably get knocked out of the cup as well. So I don't know if it becomes a thing where it's hard to be excited about the team. I personally would be disappointed at that attitude. But I don't like preaching at people about, you know, you should go. But this is one of those games where it's an opportunity. For the simple fact is that Partick are beatable, and that means we'll be in a semi-final. With the best will in the world, we'll probably be playing, if we get through, either Rangers, Celtic or Hibs. It's not like, for example, when we played Morton in the League Cup semi-final, where it was one of those, well, people thought, oh, you can miss this, it's Morton, we'll get through, no bother. This is one where, you know, there's going to be, if we get through, there's going to be demand for tickets. So if for no other reason, get along on Sunday and get the extra loyalty points so you're guaranteed your semi-final tickets.
Well, I think one thing about the crowds, Tom, is that obviously we've very often got a reputation as a very negative support. But I was encouraged on Saturday that the crowd did stick with the team, even at 0-0 through what was a patchy performance, not much happening in terms of action. The crowd did properly get behind them, and that in itself is encouraging. But you can't say that the team doesn't deserve that sort of backing given the run they're on.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of give and take there. Teams, well, supporters tend to get on the backs of teams when they lose their shape, when they look like they're getting desperate, or, you know, when it's the same old, same old. And, you know, in recent weeks we've shown that we can roll up our sleeves, we don't panic, we've been behind and we've come back to win games, we've ground out results, there's deserved faith in there. So if things aren't going our way for 80, 85 minutes and we're still in a game, there's a reasonable expectation based on the results and the way we've played recently that, you know, we will find a way through in the end. So there's a little bit more patience than there might have been at times over the last couple of years. Obviously, a two-way street, supporters are less likely to get on the back of teams that have a habit of doing these sorts of things. And miraculously, teams that the supporters aren't getting the back of have a habit of finding these goals.
Well, quite. It's the catch-22 situation, absolutely. But yeah, that was encouraging, I thought, on Saturday, and indeed in the last few weeks. And it's based quite rightly on what the side has achieved over the past couple of years. So here's hoping there is a good turnout. We don't want to be preachy, as Martin says, but you know, you might only have a couple of months more to see this team together. Every chance that guys like Ryan Jack and Niall McGinn, key players for this side, will be away in the summer. So that would be a shame. But that is our show for this week. Now, we will have minute-by-minute coverage of the game tomorrow night with Graham Terrace and the game on Sunday with Ian Brown, both over on www.bytheminute.co. Do go and join our writers during the course of the game. My thanks to Tom Watt. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you very much.
And to Martin Clunas. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Next week's show will hopefully be brought to you by the number 12 and Cup semi-final place. Good night.